page 25 in your handouts. Counting tonight, we have three classes left in the book of Job. So we have come quite a ways, and we finish up the next to last speaker tonight, which is Elihu. And then we get to the greatest speech in the book. Jehovah himself will speak. And then my plan is to cover Jehovah's speeches tonight and Sunday, the Lord willing. And then next Wednesday, that would just leave chapter 42, which is short in your Bibles, and get that covered and then do a short review of the book. And then we'll have the book of Job covered. Okay, you have one of these, Gabe. We were getting close to the end of Elihu's speech, or speeches, but the four chapters that go together. And in his speaking, he felt the need to defend God, because in his mind, especially Job, the three friends had misspoken as well, but he really felt the need to correct Job and how Job had mischaracterized God, which Job had spoken ill of Jehovah on more than one occasion. And Elihu feels the need to do that. He appeals to Job, chapter 36, verse 16. Perhaps God is bringing on this distress to you in terms of getting your attention, and to lead you from this place to a place of no constraint and a place of fatness. Your version may say that's 36:16. So again, you see the differences we've been emphasizing the last two classes. The three friends always said, without any doubt, Job, you are guilty, and you have done something evil and wicked, and this is punishment from God. Elihu is at least saying, perhaps that's the problem. Now, he wasn't any more right in that than the friends were, because Job hadn't done anything wrong. But I just wanted to emphasize the approach of Elihu over the approach of the three friends. It was more tactful and would be a little more receptive on Job's part, versus just being flat out accused as the friends did it. Okay, he did sound at times like the three. He did say some things. He said Job's being judged in verse 17. Well, judged for what? Again, there's an insinuation there. Not to scoff at this. And then he says here in 21 to 23 of chapter 36, Job, don't turn to evil, but just accept whatever God is doing to you here. Stop judging God for how you have perceived He's treating you. And then he starts to exalt this God of judgment, the powerful God of judgment He's just presented to Job. And this is what I wanted to talk about tonight, starting at this place, 36:27. If you look in your Bibles there, let's start in verse 24 and read those three verses before verse 27. This is Job 36, verse 24. Remember that you should exalt His work, of which men have sung. All men have seen it, man beholds from afar. Behold, God is exalted, and we do not know Him. The number of His years is unsearchable. A lot of truth to those words, and that's true. God is unknowable and unsearchable, except that He reveals Himself to us in some way. Now, when you get to verse 27... and I've got marked in my Bible, and you may or may not do this. This is up to your discretion. But starting in verse 27, all the way through verse 21 of chapter 37, just ignore the chapter division for the moment. And let me just read off these verse numbers. 36 is verse 27, 28, 29, and 30. Then verse 32. Then chapter 37, verses 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 9, 11, 12, 15, 16, and 21. That is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16 verses that many expositors or commentators will say it is at this point that a literal storm was approaching on the horizon. And out of that storm, out of that natural phenomenon, Elihu used that as an illustration of this raw, awesome power that God alone possesses. And the reason I rattle off these verse numbers is you'll see in all those verse numbers, there is mention of some elements of nature or the storm. Thunders, lightnings, clouds, things of that nature. For example, verse 27, He draws up the drops of water. Verse 28, the clouds pour down. Verse 29, the thundering of His pavilion. Verse 30, He spreads out His lightning about Him. He covers His hands with the lightning. Verse 32. Chapter 37, verse 2, Elihu says, listen closely to the thunder of His voice. Lightning in verse 3. And on you can go. Now, I think that's worthy to consider. I'm not going to say for certain that's what it was, because the Bible doesn't say for certain that God caused the storm to come and that's how it happened. But it's at least worth considering. So many commentators, Brother Haley's one of them, in the good book that he's written, Commentary of Job, that we've referenced a few times. It's also believed, chapter 38, verse 1, out of which did Jehovah speak? When God starts to speak, what's the text say? He spoke out of what? A whirlwind. Those who believe this first point on the chart say that is the storm out of which Jehovah spoke. That's the whirlwind. I think it's plausible. I think it's worth considering. You can make up your own mind, as I have to make up my own mind also. But was it an actual storm? It cannot be concluded with absolute certainty. We just can't do that because the Bible doesn't do that. So I'm not going to be dogmatic about that. It wouldn't add anything to the story, Harold. It just provides an element, if it's true, that would coincide with these verses. We don't have to have a storm, a literal storm present in the text, for God to have something to talk out of. God can talk however He wants. And I'm not saying it is or isn't. I'm just presenting it for your consideration. You can make up your own mind. It wouldn't add anything to the drama. Yeah. It wouldn't add a thing at all. But some commentators are more adamant about it than others. I'm just kind of indifferent to it. But I at least think we can consider it. You can think about that in view of these verses. I think it is interesting, though. Again, those 16 verses that span the end of 36 into the bulk of 37, you do see many things listed that have to do with storms. Now, that may or may not impress you. That may not make the weight of the argument one way more than the other. But I at least wanted to present it, and you all can each individually decide. Be that as it may, a storm would not have to be present on the horizon for someone to laud and to praise the creative power of Jehovah. You don't need a storm to do that. You can still consider that and talk about that. Pardon? Okay, I don't want to spend more time on it than that. I'm just offering it as a suggestion. So in your own private study, you can think about this and study it and read about it and come to a conclusion. But Harold makes a good point. It doesn't really add anything substantive to the book itself. We don't have to decide, was it or was not a storm, to get the meaning of the text. That's not necessary. Yes, it doesn't change the factualness of the account. That is correct. Okay, so that's really all that I want to talk about that. Now, whether or not it's a storm or not, let's go ahead and jump to verse 23. All right, this is at the conclusion of Elihu's speaking. The Almighty, he says. This is he's wrapping it up. The Almighty. What about Him? Does he say? We can't find Him. Is that true? It's true. Unless God chooses to reveal Himself to us, we can't find Him. And He's not flesh and blood, He's spirit. But unless He manifests Himself to us in some way, we can't find Him. He is exalted in power. Now listen carefully. The end of verse 23. And He will not do what? What will He not do? Okay, let's get the different versions here. He says what? Does not oppress. Other translations? Different ones? Afflict. Mine says he will do no violence. Okay? To justice and abundant righteousness. Why do you think Elihu felt the need to say that? And what has Job been thinking? God's not being right with me. God's punishing me. He's not being just. He's not being fair. Elihu says, that's not how God operates. God does not do violence. He does not oppress. He does not afflict. That's not the God that we're talking about here. Is that correct? That is correct. Now, does that mean that God has not sent punishment and pain on people in the past? Well, we can read the record. The Bible is replete with those situations. But the implication here, he's saying this to Job. Job, if you are as sinless as you have... Well, sinless is a bad word. If you are as innocent as you have claimed to be, but yet you're charging God with acting unfairly to you, which we could go back and we could find words of Job where he did say that. God is not being fair with me. He's treating me wrong. I'm his enemy. He is oppressing me. Elihu says that is not correct. Therefore, verse 24, how does he conclude? Instead of judging him, what does man need to do? You need to fear him. He does not regard any who are wise of heart. So I want you to focus on the way Elihu closes his speech. What do you think about it? Of the five men that have spoken, who has said the most right things? I think it's Elihu. I do. Now, he has misspoke some too, yes. He has said some things that I don't agree with and don't find correct. But more than not, he has said the most right in this. And again, it's kind of interesting because in relation to the three friends that came and Job, what's the age breakdown here? He's the youngest. Remember, one of the first things he said is that wisdom does not always come with age. And that's true. Sometimes the young can teach the old. And that's exactly correct about it. Just because you're older doesn't mean that you're wiser. So he should fear this God and not be wise of heart or wise in his own opinions. Proverbs 3, 5 and 7, familiar verses, teach the same thing. Do not be wise in thine own estimation. But fear the Lord. So Elihu wraps up saying some truthful things. And I think he needs to be commended. Okay. Now, before we do a short wrap-up here, let's open the floor for anybody have a question or comment. I've been doing most of the talking. I don't like to do that. This isn't preaching. This is class. Anybody have a question or comment? Yes, Trevor. Yes, he does of the same kind of assuming as the friends do, I think, in some regards. I think that's good. All right. Anybody else? Okay. All right. As the chart shows, all human speakers are finished. Let's look at it real quickly. Here's Job. He was a righteous man who suffered immensely. He sought answers from God regarding his suffering. That's what he wanted. What kind of reply did he get? Never heard a peep. Didn't hear a thing. And that was not what he wanted. But he did receive what from his friends? Blistering judgments. And they did. They blistered him with unkind words, caustic remarks, biting, sharp accusations, insinuations. I'm called to remember as we went through that, particularly one time, Eliphaz said, all right, here's your specific sins you've done. And he rattled off three or four things. Remember that chapter? And wasn't a shred of proof for any of it. So that's what he did get from his friends. He correctly refused those judgments from his friends. He wouldn't have any part of it. How many times did we see when they were biting toward him, did he just return the favor just right back in their face? He did. Several times we noticed that, if you will. But his error the mistakes that Job made is he called God into question. Several times he called God's moral control of the universe into question. He made some of the mistakes that some of the psalmists make. I'm trying to live here right correctly, and I do righteously, but I see around me wicked people, and what kind of life have they got? Oh, they're just living it up. Money's rolling in, and I don't understand that. So Job made those kind of arguments too, and he just felt like he was being mistreated. So that was the mistake that Job made. Now let's quickly look at the friends. They were men who were beholden to their theology. That's all they really cared about. I will go even as far as saying that they cared more about that than they did Job. That's kind of a harsh thing to say, but I think it's true. They just only saw, as Trevor said a moment ago, they just saw things one way. And it's just, Job has just got to be this way. That's just how it is. They claimed wisdom from visions and dreams. Eliphaz claimed that. They claimed wisdom from the ancients, prior generations. Bildad claimed that. And so that was their theology. They were sure of their wisdom. And they did speak some truths, but when they did speak truth, in an overall sense, the problem was when they tried to apply it to Job, what was the problem with that? It didn't fit. That's right. It didn't fit Job's situation. That's why they were incorrect. And they persisted hard on those points. But it wasn't the right thing to do. Job wasn't in that situation. So that's how we can categorize them. All right, now Elihu. He seemed to be more sympathetic towards Job than were the friends. He heard statements from both Job and the three friends that he did not like, and he endeavored to correct all of them. He spoke some to the friends and said, "You all have spoken thus, and that's wrong for these reasons." He spoke to Job, "You have spoken thus, and that's wrong for these reasons." So he addressed both groups. And in Elihu's speeches, these four chapters, some things he said were good, some things he said were not good. So there's the five human speakers, and I'm emphasizing human speakers because as we get to the next four chapters, 38 through 41, it's not a human speaker, it's a divine speaker. Do we have any worries that this last speaker will misspeak? None whatsoever. Because God doesn't misspeak. He's always speaking truth. So, the weakness of all five human speakers is evident. I think if we can look at it that way. They were all limited in their wisdom. What does man know? How far can man see? Pardon? Well, that's true. Only what God has told him. But if we take it outside of God just for the moment, how far can man see? All's in front of him. And his past is often colored by what? Does man have prejudices? He does. And he's got perspectives, and his vision is skewed by certain things. Could be right, could be wrong, but it's skewed nonetheless. So man can only see in just a short window. What's God's perspective? He can see the beginning to the end. God can look down the entire corridor of eternity, the entire timeline, and have no trouble seeing this, that, or the other thing. And so I'm just setting at naught the five human speakers with the divine speaker. They are limited in their wisdom. They were all guilty of assuming things. The three friends assumed things. Job assumed some things that were not right. Elihu made some assumptions also. And man does that. Sometimes we get it fixed in our mind. Well, it's just got to be that way. Well, it could be that way, but does it have to be that way? It doesn't have to be that way, not necessarily. There could be something that we're not seeing, that we're not aware of, that could have a direct impact on whatever situation we find ourselves in. That is precisely what happened here with Job. None of these men knew what? None of these five knew what? It's a central theme of the book, especially at the beginning. They didn't know the conversation between God and the devil. None of them knew it. They could see the outcome of it. They saw Job suffering, and they saw all of his losses, but they didn't know why it happened. You and I know that, but they didn't know that. They thought they did, but they didn't. That is correct. So they made assumptions. And so that brings us... Yes, worldly knowledge. That is correct. Not divine knowledge, but worldly, human wisdom. So if you're ever looking for a book, and the Bible is just full of them, but if you're ever looking for a book that will contrast and compare human wisdom and divine wisdom, Job's a great choice. You just can take your piece of paper and just jot down all kinds of instances in the book where you see human wisdom and its faults and failures, and right across the page you'll put down the reasons for divine wisdom and its attributes, and you'll see how they just do not compare. Yes, Rick. And we can find ourselves making the same mistakes that Job and the friends made. How many times have you come across people, they have adversity in their life and they wind up blaming God? Well, who's that sound like? That sounds like Job. Or others who say, well, I've got it all figured out, but they don't know all the facts. There's things that they just do not know, but yet they've jumped to conclusions and they just are unwilling to yield on that and unwilling to be taught. And that's not right either. We've got to be open-minded to be taught, always. All of us do. So, the only way to settle this dialogue is to let God have the final word. And He will have the final say. Remember what Job said about God in Job 28? About wisdom? Remember that beautiful chapter where he said that men will furrow through and dig through the earth to find all the treasures that are there? But can you find wisdom that way? You can't find wisdom that way. True wisdom cannot be found by man in that sense. Man can only find wisdom when God does what? When God shows him where it's at. You could, yes. And we're supposed to do that. The Bible does teach that. But man's not going to find wisdom on his own outside of God revealing it. It just won't happen. You can't find wisdom that way. And so Job had said that earlier, and now God's going to show. When God is allowed to speak, not just in this book, but let's make it present day application. Because we may even have some in this room tonight. I don't know where everyone's situation. I don't have to know everyone's situation. If there's none present tonight, I'd imagine that you'll come across some of them tomorrow at work, who don't share your religious convictions, who believe things differently than you do, and you'd have some differences on those matters. Well, what's the only way to settle that dialogue? Let who have the final say? Let God say the way it is. Well, that's the way to settle it. Go ahead, Bill. Well, that's true. That's true. All man-made religions have left the book. They're teaching their own doctrines. What did Jesus say about truth? Sanctify them through thy truth. Thy word is true. That's what he prayed about. Hebrews 6 and verse 18 says that it's impossible for God, what? He can't lie. Now the text does not say he won't lie. If it said he won't lie, that leaves the possibility that he could if he wanted to. It says he can't. It's impossible. It is against God's nature to lie. So as we see God speaking in this dialogue, you can rest assured that whatever He says, it's going to be the truth. It's going to be the absolute truth. There'll be no assumptions. There'll be no insinuations. It'll be what's true and what's right. And so God's going to settle the debate now. He's going to bring it to a close. And that's how we come here to this last part. So look at now as we begin the speeches of Jehovah. 38:1 through 41:34. And like we have been doing the last several chapters, we can cover the text more quickly. And I'm not trying to avoid anything in the book, but there's a lot of repetition in the verses because we're on a schedule to get done by next Wednesday. And I want to make sure we don't leave any of the book uncovered. But you can divide up the speeches of Jehovah in chunks or in sections, and that's what we'll try to do. And I think you'll see as we go through it that's doable. So, as we look on page 26, let's make a couple of other observations about Jehovah's speeches. Remember that during the course of his own speeches, Job, and that's what I'm talking about now, Job had raised the questions about God, questioned God, and even made some accusations, insinuations against God. He had done that. I wish we didn't have to say that, but he did. in his agony, in his vexation of spirit, he had suffered through God's silence to all those questions. God never uttered a response when that's what Job was crying for. Answer me. I want to know. Remember, on more than one occasion we've emphasized he wanted that day in court. He wanted that meeting where God could come down and they face each other. Charles at the table this past Sunday made a wonderful talk about this, how that Job lamented the fact that there's no umpire that could mediate between two equal parties. The problem is man and God are not equal parties. And he lamented that fact. So God didn't answer him the way Job wanted, so he had to suffer through all that in the silence of Jehovah. Now God's going to begin to answer Job. But do you think it'll be the answer Job's looking for? It won't be the answer Job was looking for. Something else I want you to consider is that notice that God does not respond directly to what Job had asked. You won't see it. He doesn't tell Job, "Now, Job, all right, I've heard everything you all have said. Now, Job, here's why you've been suffering." He doesn't tell him that. If you were Job, wouldn't you want to know that? That's what you've been crying for. And God doesn't address that. When we started the book, I remember making the comment, it's entirely possible that Job went to his grave never knowing why he suffered, because the book doesn't say that God told Job or that Job found out. It's not in there. I can't prove that he didn't know, but the text does not say that he was told. So I'm left to conclude that Job never was told about that meeting that God had with Satan when they had that exchange with one another and God let Satan test him. Yes, Job does conclude that he had misspoke, and we will emphasize that is correct. But I'm just pointing out the fact that God does not respond directly to what Job had requested. That's not in the speeches. God spends his whole speech defending his right to act as sovereign. And he has acted as sovereign. And God always will act in a sovereign way. And the role that man does not need to play is what? When God acts. Do not question God. We've referenced it two or three times before. We'll reference it again. Romans chapter 9. Paul talks about the potter and the clay. And the clay does not say what to the potter? Why did you make me thus? The clay does not have power over the potter. It's the other way around. And we'll look at these speeches of Jehovah and we'll see he is defending his right to act as he had. Had God acted inappropriately in the book? Not one time. Not one. He's been accused of it. But he hadn't acted inappropriately. As Eli said when he finished his speech, God does not do injustice. God does not oppress. God does not afflict just for the purpose of acting on a whim. Hey, let's really stick it to old Job down there today because I got nothing else better to do. That's not the God of the Bible. Man does that sometimes with each other, but God doesn't act that way. So God defends his right to act the way that he has. Okay. Now, it appears that God initially refers to Job. Look in chapter 38, verse 2. And the first question that Jehovah asks. Read verse 2 for us, Matt, please. This is Job 38, verse 2. How had Job darkened counsel? Did the King James read a different way other than that? Much different, or is it about the same? I didn't look that up. It's the same? All right. Who is it that darkened counsel? It could be any of the human speakers. Could be. But I'm suggesting that I think it was mainly Job. Job had darkened counsel in that he had darkened God's purpose by casting him in an unfavorable light. God is not being right with me. God is dealing unjustly and unfair with me. And that was darkening counsel, if you will. It was casting God in a bad shadow, bad light. The end of verse 2. By words without knowledge. Somebody here has spoken about things that they know nothing about. And God said that. Job out of Yeah, Job is the one he's addressing. Yes, you are correct. Verse 1 seems to settle that. But I think you could also say that the friend spoke without knowledge too. But I think your point is correct. He's speaking to Job. So then God challenges Job. Look at verse 3. Now this is pretty tough talk. What's God say to do to Job? Prepare yourself. What's the biblical language there? I've always found this phrase interesting. Gird up your loins. What's that all about? What happened when a person girded up his loins? All right, we had those long flowing garments back in the days of the Bible. You had to take your long flowing garments and tuck them into your girdles, girding up the loins. Get the garments out of the way because they were cumbersome to get ready to work. God says, get ready. Because I got some things to say to you that's really going to rock your world, Job. You've not considered what I've got to say. All right. Mine says, gird up your loins like a man. So don't be a kid about this, Job. This is some man stuff coming. I will ask you into verse 3, and what? You teach me. I want you to put yourself in Job's shoes just for the moment, and God tells you that. Mike, I'm going to ask you and you teach me. I couldn't imagine being in that kind of position before the great God of the universe. You can't teach God anything. But God feels the need to make this rather strong statement at the beginning of His speech to set the tone, if you will. This, I guess, would be, in a way, this is blistering too, but this is what these guys need to hear, especially Job. God's not going to misspeak. He's going to be exactly right. Now, we begin to look at this in sections. Look at it with me. This is what God seems to be talking about. God questions Job on creation, verses 4 through verse 38. Verses 4 through 7. And I've got this on the chart in terms of statements, not questions. God says to Job, explain to me the earth's foundation. See what he says there? Where were you when I laid the foundation of the earth? Tell me if you have understanding. Tell me how this works, Job. Well, what's the problem? He can't do it, can he, Tom? I can't do it. You can't do it. So explain to me how that works. Verses 4 through 7 of how the earth is held, how it maintains its position, what its foundation is. Explain to me how the sea stays put. Verses 8 through 11. I like especially in that section, verse 11, God's, or verse 10 and 11, and I placed boundaries on it. I set a bolt and doors, and I said to the sea, thus far you shall come, but no farther, and here shall your proud wave stop. Who controls that? God does. Now, Job, you tell me how I got that worked out. I'd be clueless. We don't know how God has that worked out. But that's the statement he makes to him. Verses 12 to 15. Job, explain to me how the dawning of each day works. When you let the sun come up and it christens each day's life. Have you ever in your life commanded the morning and caused the dawn to know its place? Job, can you do that? No man can do that. That's through verse 15. He says, Job, explain the vast detail of all that's been created, 16 through 18. Have the gates of death been revealed to you? Have you seen the gates of the deep darkness? Have you understood the expanse of the earth? Tell me if you know all this. Into verse 18. How small do you think Job is feeling right about now? He's been pretty insignificant. All right. Verse 19 through 24. Job, explain to me light and darkness. Tell me all about the snow and the hail and how all that works. And look especially in verse 21. Do you think God has ever used sarcasm in His Word? He has. Look at verse 21. You know, for you were born then, and the number of your days is great. Tell me, Job, how that works. That's God being sarcastic with him. To get him to see the foolishness of what he'd been saying. Job, you do not know how these things have played themselves out. And I'm trying to make a point with you about all this. He says, Job, explain how the earth receives all its precipitation. all the evaporation process and coming down and then all this. Tell me how all that works, all the intricate details of that. Since you designed all that and you're so smart. I don't want to say that God is saying to Job, you're so smart, but that's really where it's coming down to. Tell me how that works. Verses 25 through 30 of chapter 38. Verse 29. Look at verse 28. Has the rain a father? Who has begotten rain? Tell me how that had its beginning. Who has begotten the drops of dew? From whose womb has come the ice and the frost of heaven? Who has given its birth? Tell me how that began. Through verse 30. He begins now talking about outer space, 31 through 33. All the expanse of the heavens, the constellations, all those stars, Orion and the Bear, the constellations. Who has fixed their rule over the earth? Describe that to me, Job, if you can. He could not. Job then says in 34 through 38, explain how the clouds work. Who controls the clouds? 34 through 38. Can you lift up your voice to the clouds so that an abundance of water may cover you? Can you send forth lightnings that they may go and say to you, here we are? Who can count the clouds by wisdom or tip the water jars of the heavens when it's time to empty the clouds out? Who makes that decision, Job? And tell me how you come at that conclusion when it's time to do that. All right. Look at this real quickly as we summarize this one chapter. What has been God's point to Job thus far, just in this one chapter? There's a theme. And these were just different categories, but what's the point? God's in control. All right. What else is the point? God's wiser. Are there some things? Now let's make sure we tie this back to the book. We're about out of time tonight. Are there some things that man just does not know? There is. Things that man will not know them. He cannot know them. They are beyond his reach. No matter how hard he tried to grasp them and understand them, comprehend them, they are beyond him. His ability to comprehend and to understand and to know. The things that God has just mentioned in this chapter alone are all beyond Job's knowledge. Job can't answer one of those questions. Well, I know how that works. What about people today that go and study meteorology? And that field doesn't really interest me at all. I mean, they're wrong half the time and they still get paid. You know, weathermen are wrong half the time, they still make money. I'm not trying to make fun of any weathermen. I hope nobody's in there honest. It's a weatherman. But even if you go to school and you study meteorology and the exactness of that science, you still haven't figured out how it works? You know, there are things that are beyond the knowledge of the nation's most educated and highly qualified meteorologists. They just are. And so as we tie this back to the book, all right, what has Job been saying? What has Job been talking about with respect to his situation? There are things at play here in Job's life that were beyond his knowledge. And he shouldn't have done what? He shouldn't have questioned God. That's the point that God wanted him to see. Okay? So, yes, Wayne. Okay. Yes. Okay. Wayne's point is you look at the first four verses of John's Gospel. In the beginning was the Word was God, and the Word was with God always. And he does know, but man in his limited faculties does not know these things. That's a good comparison. Okay, we'll pick up with chapter 39 on Sunday morning, and we'll do our best to finish Jehovah's speeches on that occasion. Thank you all for your participation tonight.